Greetings, citizens, and welcome to another edition of Flashpoint, a weekly public access cable television show of issues and ideas. But not just a cable television show, it's now also available on the internet. And in a moment, you'll be able to see our universal resource locator. My name is Alfred C. Snyder. I'm the Edmund W. Lawrence Professor of Forensics. And Flashpoint is brought to you by the Lawrence Trade Union, an endowed co-curricular program at the University of Vermont, which teaches UVM students the arts and skills of debating, and then has them debate competitively against other college and university students and other available sentient beings from throughout the universe. One of the other things that the Lawrence Debate Union does to try to increase discourse and discussion in our community is to bring you Flashpoint each week. Let's meet our panelists for this edition of Flashpoint. And on my right, I have the head counselor himself, Terry McKnight, who's a debate coach at the University of Vermont. And you're also very active now with a firm here in town called Forest World.
Yes, that's
correct. Could you tell us a little about what's going on with Forest World?
Forest World is an internet company which is building a portal into the forest products sector of the economy on the internet.
Mm-hmm. And so is there, just so we can chop down all those trees as quickly as possible?
No, Forest World is trying to promote sustainability or certified forest products throughout the world.
To fight deforestation.
You bet.
All right, very good. On my left, I have Shannon Redman, who's a newbie on Flashpoint. Should we throw that trick on her?
Yes.
Okay, well, maybe not. Shannon's from Emory University, and where she works with their debate program. And she's here to work at the World Debate Institute. And you've been kind of brought in as a hired gem. I don't want to use violent metaphors, but as a hired gem. And you've just finished working with the Emory National Debate Institute down in Atlanta. Could you tell us a little bit about it?
It was a wonderfully successful program that we ran from June 21st to July 3rd. And we had about 290 high school students and teachers come in, and we taught them about policy debate and this year's policy resolution. They did a lot of research. I think they had a whole lot of fun, and it was a very successful program, I think.
Well, I was there as faculty. I thought you did a marvelous job.
Thank you.
By the way, but let's see if that's true
after
3 weeks from now. Well, the topic for our show is related to all that. The topic is the World Debate Institute, because at the University of Vermont, coming up very, very soon, starting officially on July 31st, the day of the Reggae Festival, my goodness, the 17th World Debate Institute will be starting at the University of Vermont, and it's an intensive residential training program for high school and college students from all over creation, and also coaches, to prepare to be the best they possibly can be, although without having to sign in for a four-year hitch. And it's emphasizing policy debating, where there's a set topic that students and everybody prepares on for a whole year, as well as parliamentary debating, where they have topics which are brought up for just specific debates. Let's talk about what a debate institute is. People say, oh, it's a debate institute. What does that mean? Shannon, you've been involved now for how many debate institutes do you think you've been involved in?
Well, I attended four when I was in college, and then I helped at probably three in college and two in graduate school and two since graduate school, so about 10 or so. Mm-hmm.
Let's say someone was going to be sending a student to a debate institute. What does that mean? What will the student do? What?
It's a very intensive classroom-oriented setting. They'll have lectures, have practice debate rounds, a lot of speaking skills. They'll do a lot of research in the library and using traditional library resources as well as using the internet. And it's just a very intensive, academically oriented time. And there's also a degree of socialization that's involved, and you can socialize with people, and since you have a partner, it's a lot of team building and community building exercises.
Mm-hmm, as well. And the hours are not, it's not like easy hours.
No, it's very, very
all day and all night,
yeah.
and everything. We have decided that we will give them one day off this time during it, in which they're
each
here.
Month?
Each fortnight, they will get one day off. Who are some of the faculty members, for example? Where does one find a faculty for a debate institute? For example, at Emory, where did you... Who are some of the people, not necessarily by names, but the types of people?
Frequently we'll have professors from other schools, other colleges and universities that we compete against. And we also bring in other debaters who have who are college debaters. We have some high school teachers who will come in and be on the faculty also. And then just some roving evaluators that will come in and help teach the students.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What kind of students, what motivates people, you think, to decide to come to a debate institute, besides the fact that they have the financial wherewithal, or somebody provides it, and it's 2 weeks away from home, very important when you're young. But my impression is that a lot of these students don't necessarily want to escape from home. They generally come from fairly supportive homes, at least the parents are supportive. What drives them, you think, to want to come to a debate institute? I'll ask you again.
I think it's to make themselves better, better debaters. They know that a very intensive two-week program is going to be something that they're going to get a whole lot of benefit out of. And they know that it's going to help them achieve a higher level of success and make them better students, make them better leaders, give them greater public speaking skills, analytical skills. And I think that, you know, academically oriented students see a great deal of benefit in debate and debate camp, mm-hmm. as a structure in helping them achieve all their scholastic goals and academic goals in college and then through in high school and then later through mm-hmm. college.
Mm-hmm. I do think that there's a competitive element to
sense
of most people who are involved in intercollegiate competitive debate do have that competitive drive, not only for themselves, but for their schools.
Right.
And they feel that if they go to this institute, that it's going to improve the team that they're on. And often don't they go with team members from their own school and work together at the institute mm-hmm. as a team?
Mm-hmm. And in the college institute, less so with high school students, but it's also true, sometimes their schools will actually send them.
Okay.
For example, the University of Miami down in Florida, we have so much love and respect for them because the way they start their debate year is by sending 4 to 6 of their college debaters up here to work incredibly hard, and they're great students. They're so motivated, very intelligent, very articulate, and they're competitively successful too, but they start the year here. So it's a way to get a start. Some of those students who come here don't have really excellent coaches during the year, because debate coaches are a fairly rare commodity. We have a rich load of them right here on this table. But, and so they, this is their chance to come and get really top-flight, national-level coaching. And I know, Terry, when you debated at Canisius College.
I did.
It's been Buffalo, New York.
Yes, prehistoric times.
Yes, and in 1972, you were the top college debater in America. You never went to an institute. See what you could have done.
I didn't even know they existed.
Maybe
you could have maximized your potential, but no.
Maybe you could have won that octopile around that. No. How much of your success do you attribute to the fact that of your coach? Burke Gross, right?
Oh, yes.
And do you think, how different would your debate career have been without a good coach like Burke?
Oh, I think it would have been shorter.
You couldn't have done it on your own.
No, he was excellent. And, he kept bringing you down to reality and skills and moving forward in terms of skills, not just research. And it was a tremendous help, it was.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to add one thing on going to institutes, because I think this is true. And, for parents, something to be sensitive to. Sometimes it's hard for academically oriented people to find people like them.
Yep.
And one of the things that they really enjoy about the institute is that they're meeting other intelligent, you know, committed people who are interested in issues and are interested in working through the issues, and I think that's rewarding for them, and it's kind of self-affirming for them, and that's important.
And it's depressing where in some parts of American youth culture, it's not fashionable to be intelligent, to know about world affairs, to act like you care about social problems. It's not, and so it's very good for those students to be able to find some homies they can hang with and talk about global warming
and listen to reggae,
you know,
music.
Income disparities.
I wanted to also add, as someone who, as a high school debater, I didn't have a coach that had a whole lot of experience. Going to debate camp for me provided me an opportunity to get coaching beforehand so that I could be more successful during the year. And it also helped me realize that it was something that I could do in college, and that it was an academic activity that could get me further in life and help me make connections. And I think that was really important, because I think if I had just existed in the small community of my high school debate team and dealt with it on a much smaller level, that I probably would not have been as successful a college debater. I probably wouldn't have debated in college.
Well, so we've got high school students, college students, coaches, both high school and college coaches, faculty members, administrators, and then they're all going to get together and have debates and lectures and discussions and research teams and speaking drills and public debates and a small tournament at the end of and all this. So that's really what's going to happen for 2 weeks at the University of Vermont, where for the 17th summer in a row, we're going to be the debate hub of the universe, right here in Burlington, Vermont. There are some special parts to this year's program, and one of them is the presence of students from Urban Debate Leagues. And this is the first year that we have a large contingent of students who are coming from the New York Urban Debate League. We also have students coming from some of the other Urban Debate League programs around the country. Shannon, you've been involved with UDL for a while.
Beginning.
down in Atlanta, where it all started. And I wonder if you could tell us a bit about that program and the student background and what they can expect when we get them up here.
Well, basically when we started the program long ago and far away when I was still in college, we went into a small number of schools that are part of the Atlanta public school system, and we had our students go in and other college students go in and teach them debate skills. We sent them to Institute, and they participated in the high school circuit in Atlanta, and it was just a very successful program. We had a lot of students who were kind of wavering in terms of their grades and getting into trouble in school, who really became committed to debate as an activity, decided that they needed to not mess their grades up, and decided that they needed to be good kids in school so that they could go to debate tournaments, because it was something that meant something to them and gave them something to do, an activity that was academically oriented that made them feel important and gave them a lot of knowledge about the world around them. And so just seeing the change in the students that we brought in the beginning made us realize this was something that we needed to do on a national level. And so
the Urban Debate League program really started in Atlanta, piloted by Emory University, and then something happened.
We exploded.
Something big.
Yes, we got a grant from the Open Society Institute, and we started the New York Urban Debate League in conjunction with the Open Society Institute. And the first year, we brought 160 students from the New York inner city down to Atlanta for a debate workshop. That was the first year. This last year was the second year. We brought 120 students. And this year, the New York students are coming to Vermont, and we had a population of 96 Baltimore students and teachers, because we just started the Baltimore Urban Debate League. So it's really, it's great working with these students. They come in, they're very excited. They want to, you know, they want to immediately go to the library. They want to immediately start researching and getting into the issues. And it's just really amazing to see how quickly they take to the activity and how excited they get about it so quickly.
Now, back in May, it was, there was the Idea Fest in New York City, and all three of us were there where they were talking about the expansion of the Urban Debate League programs to many cities. Terry, what was your impression of that meeting and where this program is really headed?
Well, what impressed me most about the meeting was the dedication and the time which all of the participants are putting into supporting that program across the country, expanding it to Los Angeles, San Francisco, to the Midwest. And that dedication really, I think, speaks a lot about debate and what debate means to the people who have been active in it, because most of these people were people who were now past their debating years.
They didn't need to be at that meeting.
They didn't need to be there at all. They have careers. They have, professorships at their own universities, and yet they want to be involved in bringing this activity to the Urban Debate League students. Mm-hmm. And the reasons behind that, I can recognize and empathize with right away. When you see these young high school students debate and how much energy they bring to debate, to an activity that requires research, analysis, presentation in an organized fashion of arguments, and then responding to counter arguments, that activity has so motivated the students themselves that it's very revealing, and I think the success of it has spoken for expanding the program, and everybody has stepped up to do that. It's very impressive.
It's such a refreshing change of image as to the way many young people are portrayed in the media, and especially young people who are African American or Hispanic are portrayed as being not committed, not intellectual, not interested, thugs. And it's great to see hundreds of these students pouring over pieces of paper and arguing about what a paragraph means and trying to discern what a specific line of philosophy would accept and not accept. And it really shows that there's so much more to our young people than is popularly being expressed. And these aren't students who are like, the cream of the crop from New York or Baltimore or whatever. They target students.
Right.
They target schools which are at the bottom of the heap educationally. This program only operates in schools that are desperately in need. And also there's a sense in which they try to recruit just average students, and especially students who are bored or discipline problems because...
Marginal, kind of on the line.
They're marginalized because they're a little bored and they're active and the role they're given is passive. And I think that a lot of those students have really, really warmed to debate. So it's not just picking the students who would already succeed. And I think it's a great program. So we're welcoming them. We had a contingent of them last year and they were fabulous. And it was rough for some of them. They got roughed up pretty bad at the tournament. But when I saw students who did poorly at the tournament here go on to win great awards in New York City, semester-long awards, et cetera, it's quite inspiring, actually. Now, some of them are coming to the University of Vermont today. And I'm very excited about that as well. One of the other things that's going on is the coaches' workshop. We have 43, I believe, coaches who are attending. That's an incredible number. And that's something where the Institute can really multiply the debate experience.
Is that high school and college?
High school and college. We have both policy debate and parliamentary debating. And one of our other big achievements this year is that a lot of stuff is going to be broadcast over the Internet. And at the bottom of the screen, you can see the URL for the website. A number of our events at the World Debate Institute will be broadcast live, and if you go to that page, we'll tell you about it. We want everyone to try to tune in over the Internet to our big public debate at 4 p.m. on Friday, August 13th. It's going to be about educational reform, in which we're pitting the finest and most silvery-tongued individuals we can find against each other in a public debate, and heckling will be allowed.
And encouraged.
And encouraged. And also, last year, what we did in the break between the construction speeches and the rebuttal speeches, we had floor speeches, so anyone in the audience could stand up and make a one-minute speech in support of either side, and it was a great way to
include the audience,
get people involved. Last year, our debate was about how humans should use natural resources and what our relationship to natural resources were. And James Lovelock, who's the author of the Gaia Hypothesis, was in town, saw the sign, just showed up, and stood up and made a floor speech. And he said, well, I was the one who originated this Gaia Hypothesis. I was like, who is this guy? And one of our faculty members said, hey, that's James Lovelock, man. That's the guy. You never know what will happen. So tune in. And there'll be a lot of instructional videos and debates that people can watch as well.
Isn't that part of what's driving people to support Urban Debate League and to be involved in debate going on in their lives is wanting others to join the debate?
Yeah, join the debate.
To be able to discuss issues that are confronting our society, our world, industries, in a much more informed and rational fashion, and to help by that kind of clarity to reach better solutions.
So it's also, if you give students the opportunity, students who might come from a high school that lacks a lot of resources, doesn't have a great library, you teach them how to use the internet and you give them access to the entire world, and they realize that there's so much going on beyond their little section of the world and their school. I think it just provides them a whole lot of opportunities and just gives them an opportunity to see the world.
Mm-hmm. Young people, I think today, well, all of us are pelted by messages that say that you can't make a difference, you're just one voice, these big decisions are taking place, you have nothing to do with it, you can't do anything. And I think if anything's going to be true of the 21st century and the information age, it's that ideas and information are power. And I think that debate gives students an opportunity to learn that their voice connected with their ideas can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, I think you really transform someone into being a marginal citizen into being a model citizen.
And one other thing that it does, at least this is what I've taken away from debate and feel like most blessed with, is an understanding of how to distinguish between an idea and an argument and information. You know, all information that comes to us on the net, on television, is not good information.
Right.
It's not positive. It's not constructive. What's the source of it?
Right.
Who paid for the study? Who's the one supporting? That we have to look at information critically in order to find a path to better decisions.
Well, especially since we have so much information, how do you process it and how do you determine yourself which information is right or wrong?
The internet age in terms of information is very much different than the network TV age. In the network TV age, there were three networks and maybe PBS, and that was it. And that's where you were trying for all your information. And because there were so few of them, they all aimed at the center of the audience. So there wasn't much wiggle room for critical thinking. Now you have experts that say it's white and experts that say it's pink, and then you have to decide for yourself which experts you're going to believe. So the variety of information makes critical thinking more necessary than ever. If you wanted to say to parents why you thought it was a good idea for young people to be involved in debating, are you a parent? Right, I'm talking to you. Well, they're going to talk to you. What are the kind of messages that you would give them?
I think that one of the single best reasons for a student to debate is the research skills alone. The research skills, the ability to use a library, the ability to just think of an idea or a topic and know how to come up with just limitless amounts of information about that topic is one of the single most useful skills that a student can have. It makes such a difference in your college experience and your high school experience, in your ability to go into a library and not be frightened and overwhelmed by it, but to make it a tool and a very useful academic tool. I think that's probably one of the single best reasons, that and the analytical thinking skills and the ability to determine the bias of a source, I think, are some of the best.
Yeah. I think following up on that, actually, but it's a critical thing, is that debate requires you to debate both sides of an issue. And so you don't just go out and find the sources that support your affirmative position on the issue. You must find sources that you feel confident about using that argue the other side of the issue. And I think that really teaches young students to start thinking that way, that there are two sides to issues. And that's a very, very advantageous thing. And I think ultimately the ability to express yourself orally, to respond to what someone else has said just a minute ago in an organized, convincing fashion, that works anywhere. In a job interview, working on a job, making a presentation to a group in a company, in a hospital, all of those settings, the ability to speak well and to speak really extemporaneously in a fashion that's convincing will serve well in almost any career, I think.
Well, studies show that people who are identified as leaders are people who communicate constructively. That is, they say good things about some things and bad things about other things. They try to separate what's working and what's not working in communication. And I guess my message for parents would be that if you want your child to be a leader, then you need to give them the indispensable skill to do that, and that's their critical communication skills and the ability to tell, not just to say it, but also be somewhat correct in what's a good idea and what's a bad idea.
One of the other useful skills is your time management skills, just because being able to juggle all the debate work, it's just like being a soccer player or a football player. You have to get your homework done, and you have to go to practice, and you have to do this. That it requires a great deal of discipline to debate and to get all the research done and to really compartmentalize everything. And that's such an asset when you go on to college, and then after college when you have a job, being able to organize your day and organize your thoughts and be able to prioritize things, because that's a significant part of debate, is learning those time management and prioritizing skills. They're invaluable. I mean, they're just...
I thought you were going to talk, too, about the fact that the speeches are limited
in that
time.
Too.
You must say things
quickly.
Concisely. It's like the old saying that...
You have to speak within the time limits?
Time.
Well, so do we. You came to the end of our time. No, we've covered all the relevant issues. You know how it is. So, the World Debate Institute, 1999. It's based at the Royal Tyler Theater at the University of Vermont. If people want to come by, they can come into the theater. And Shannon, your office will be in room 210. And you can talk to them and point them in a direction if they're interested. And for those of you who are interested in finding out more about the World Institute for a future year, get in touch with us. The Universal Resource Locator is available right there on the screen. Well, thanks a lot for watching this edition of Flashpoint, and we hope that you'll tune in every week, and we hope that we'll be seeing some of you at the World Debate Institute. And until then, don't forget what we always say,
think for yourself.